From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On Tuesday before Thanksgiving, the Federal Communications Commission published its plan to repeal rules protecting so-called net neutrality. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, who was once a lawyer for the telecom giant Verizon, has championed the rollback, saying in a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed that net neutrality rules are a, quote, burdensome regulation that have, quote, failed consumers and businesses alike. The five-person panel will vote on the rule change in the next few weeks, and the decision is expected to be 3-2 in favor of undoing net neutrality. One of the commissioners voting against it is Jessica Rosenworcel, who wrote her own op-ed in the LA Times. She said, "There is something not right about a few unelected FCC officials making such vast determinations about the future of the internet." On Monday, about 200 tech companies, including Twitter and Pinterest, sent a letter to the FCC urging the agency to preserve net neutrality. Well, before we get into a discussion about what the FCC plans to do and how it could impact us all, here is a short video from the New York Times explaining just what net neutrality is.
Net neutrality rules classify high-speed internet as a public utility. The goal is to ensure consumers have open and equal access to all content on the internet. Here's how it works. When you download content from the internet, it arrives in packets of data. Think of the packets as literal packages. Let's say you want to watch a Netflix movie, which is 10 packages big. First you order, but before Netflix ships, those packages have to go through a sorting facility. In this analogy, that's an internet service provider, like Verizon or Comcast. Now, what net neutrality means is that all packages must be delivered at the same rate. And currently, there are FCC rules in place to make sure that happens.
And that's the New York Times' explainer on what net neutrality actually is. Ernesto Falcone is my guest. He is the Legislative Counsel with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Welcome to the program, Ernesto.
Thanks for having me.
So before we actually talk about what we could imagine the internet without net neutrality, let's get right into what Ajit Pai wants to do. He has described the current structure of net neutrality as preserved by rules set under the Obama administration as being unfriendly to business, actually being worse for the internet. Yet somehow Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and all of these big companies don't agree with him. What does he plan to do?
So on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, he released a draft order of the explicitly what he plans to do. And it's as bad as you are hearing. The idea is to remove all of the federal protections that users and businesses rely on when it comes to dealing with the major internet service providers, such as Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, and do away with all of them. This is such a dramatic change of trajectory and leadership of the FCC. And I say that because Republican and Democratic commissions in the past have never gone so far as to say, we don't need to do anything regarding major internet service providers and their tendency to engage in anti-competitive conduct.
So the companies that seem to be the main beneficiaries of this potential rule change are the big telecom companies, are the big ISPs, right? Like Verizon, Comcast, et cetera. And these are a handful of corporations that stand to gain big, but most other or many other internet-based corporations or corporations that rely on the internet for business are opposed to this, right?
That's correct. You look at I would even say, go so far as saying virtually almost everyone else that participates in the internet ecosystem is against this proposal, with the exception of AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and a few other of the largest ISPs. There are small internet service providers all across the country that have told the FCC they're fine with the rules, they're fine with the regulations as they exist. They think they help preserve competition, they help them compete against the major incumbents. You have more than 900 people who make a living by creating online video. These are kind of competitors to your standard cable television products. More than 1,000 small businesses all across the country in all 50 states that have explicitly asked the FCC not to move forward on this. It's it's wide reaching in terms of the number of individuals and businesses that are all very concerned about what the ISP will do if completely let off the leash to decide the future of the internet without any sort of oversight.
So let's look at specifically what Ajit Pai is saying to justify this rule change. He goes back to what happened under President Obama, where he said that Obama publicly pressured the FCC to reject the longstanding consensus on a market-based approach to the internet. He instead urged the agency to impose upon ISPs a creaky regulatory framework called Title II, which was designed in the 1930s to tame the Ma Bell telephone monopoly. This is what he wrote in the Wall Street Journal article. And then a few months later, the FCC followed Obama's instructions on a party line vote. He says that he voted no, and that he said this burdensome regulation has failed consumers and businesses alike. In the 2 years after the FCC's decision, broadband network investment dropped more than 5.6%, the first time a decline has happened outside of a recession. And Ajit Pai says if the current rules are left in place, millions of Americans who are on the wrong side of the digital divide would have to wait years to get more broadband. Can you break this down?
Yeah, I it's a self-serving narrative, and it's very loose on the facts. In fact, it's not even premised on actual reality in some respects. So let's break it down. Network investment has been up. There's a number of studies that actually contradict the FCC's assertion that network investment has gone down. In fact, most network investment is based on when the next generation of technology is rolled out. So in our, you know, what people understand, like third generation wireless, 4G to 4G, fourth generation LTE, that's when a lot of the infrastructure investment happens. All of these CEOs for these major ISPs have told their investors after Chairman Wheeler moved forward on the net neutrality order and the reclassification under Title II, that none of that was going to harm their investment portfolio and their plans to invest in the future. In fact, AT&T told Congress recently that they would invest $1 billion more if they changed the corporate tax code. Right, and it really has nothing to do with the regulatory landscape. They're fine with it. It's just they have an opportunity to extract extra rents without these protections in place. I would also really push back on there's a narrative that they're pushing very hard of that the Obama administration deviated from the norm, and that's quite actually the opposite. Chairman Pai is the first FCC commissioner to ever come out with a plan that eliminates network neutrality. Chairman Powell, the Republican chairman under the Bush administration, Chairman Kevin Martin under the Bush administration, Chairman Jenikowski before Chairman Wheeler. You have contiguous chairmen who have different approaches of how to protect an open internet, but all have approached it from the perspective of we have to preserve net neutrality through whatever means we have. So the reality is there's actually been a very short period of time where the FCC has abandoned its goal of preserving an open internet, and we're living that time right now.
And so his attempt to compare what the rules under Obama to preserve net neutrality to some creaky regulatory framework from the 1930s, you say that that's a little deceptive?
Well, it definitely is, because the laws are designed to enforce our principles. So what does the Communications Act of 1996, which is actually the correct year to cite to, what does it do? It says our communications infrastructure has to act in a non-discriminatory way. That's not an old 18th century concept. That's just what people expect today.
And that's law, so right? That's 1990. That's law set in 1996.
1996 is the biggest update to the Telecommunications Act, which is what we have today. So Congress, ratified everything that was in the decades prior of communications law, which from 1934 was the previous big update. And there was no intent from Congress to abandon the idea that your communications platform has to act in a non-discriminatory way, respect your privacy, and ensure that there's a handful of competition powers at the FCC to ensure that there isn't monopolization. This FCC is now treating that as if that's some sort of old, outdated thinking. And I think you ask anyone out there in the, any regular person out there outside of DC, and they kind of expect the government to be doing these things, to fight monopolies, to ensure prices are going down, ensure people have access. and that nothing's interfering with anything that's lawful on the internet.
So these proposed rules that the FCC will vote on December 14th, are they in compliance with the 1996 Telecommunications Act?
The proposed rules that the Chairman Pai is pushing?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a funny game of how they have to play it. So the real quick story is the Telecommunications Act gave the FCC two choices of how they treat ISPs. And there's been a long litigation history behind the agencies in the past, particularly Republican agencies, treating them as quote-unquote information services. The key difference, though, between what the Bush years have been about and what is happening now is that even when Chairman Martin and Chairman Powell classified broadband companies as information services, which is less regulated than telecom services, they've always asserted that they still have power over them to preserve an open internet. And it wasn't until Comcast defeated the Federal Communications Commission in the D.C. Circuit in 2008, if I remember the date right, it wasn't until that court case where that legal theory was eviscerated. And so up until that point, everyone has always believed that the FCC's job and duties were to protect openness and neutrality. Now, the argument of, oh, well, we've always had this current mindset back then is bogus on, you know, when you look at the history.
So the you have the public arrayed against this. You have tech companies arrayed against this. And Ajit Pai is claiming that in the name of business and industry, he wants to do this, but really the only beneficiaries are a handful of the giant telecom companies. What is his interest? Is it clear to you that he's basically towing the line that his former employer, Verizon, is expecting of from him, despite the fact that the majority of even the business world is against this?
You would be hard-pressed to find in the draft order that was circulated Wednesday anything that was not a request from AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast.
Wow.
It is to the letter what they've asked the FCC to do. And to kind of put a fine point on your earlier question about is this legal, quote unquote, that's yet to be determined. That this will be challenged in court. You know, I think a number of parties will litigate against the FCC. And the means of how the FCC has gone about to try to do this is questionable. It is questionable to say that broadband companies operate as in the same way as what, you know, America Online and Prodigy were in the 1996 era, which is what information services were originally conceived to be. That was what Congress conceived them to be when they drafted the law. And telecom services were your communications platform, your internet service provider from dial-up internet to DSL broadband at the time. It is an open question whether you can make all these assertions and narratives and, you know, cherry pick your facts to support your arguments in the public arena. But when you get to court, it has to survive scrutiny. And I don't think the FCC's plan will survive that scrutiny at the end of the day.
What about the public reaction? There have been polls showing that there is strong public opinion in favor of preserving net neutrality. And yet, mysteriously, the FCC has been able to point to comments that show the public might be against net neutrality. And there's some controversy about the veracity of those comments.
That's correct. The New York Attorney General has actually raised some pretty pointed concerns that the FCC is not cooperating with them in trying to identify people in the state of New York who have been misappropriated in opposition. So there's a number of comments, you know, some predict up to a million comments that are from you know, that are people saying they're against network neutrality, but the actual people who are being identified have never actually filled out these forms, have never actually filed.
That's identity theft on a mass scale, if it's true.
That's what the New York Attorney General has
Eric
asserted.
Schneiderman,
I think that kind of adds to the larger, who is doing that, right? That it is a weird thing to have happen in a public comment process, we don't know anything more than that, but it is weird, and it is an unknown territory, I think, in the public discourse. When we deal with these issues.
And of course, in this era of fake news and, you know, this very widespread sense that one can sort of manufacture and fabricate all sorts of things. It shouldn't be terribly surprising to us that there might be efforts to dilute public opinion. So one of the analyses around these comments that have been, at 1.3 million of them have been deemed fake, is that those people who claimed they were against net neutrality were much more likely to use a stock answer, sort of a script, suggesting that they might, their comments might be sort of replicated from a standard script, possibly by bots. And if that's the case, then the FCC doesn't have much a leg to stand on in claiming that the public is behind them, right?
They've never had that. I mean, that's just the reality. Is no matter what is manufactured, they've never had public opinion on their side, and they know that. I mean, I think that's part of why, you know, the draft order came out the day before Thanksgiving, right? It's very difficult for people to pay attention during the middle of the holidays. I also think the real controversy to me in terms of the comments is the amount of reliance the FCC has on industry's word. So industry says they will never, ever block websites or discriminate against other folks. They just don't need a law to require them to do that. And the FCC takes that at face value and says, okay, that's good enough for us. The industry is the source of all the studies to say network investment is down, despite statements by their own CEOs on investor calls, despite their own, you know, statements after the fact. In other contexts, that is not the case, and the FCC decides to choose the, you know, the helpful narrative over the other, and it's all it's all purposefully, you know, picked in a way to create the justification rather than actually justify it based on the facts on the ground.
One more comment on the issue of the likely faked comments. The data scientist Jeff Cao, who did the analysis, said that when you repeal or remove the comments that were in favor of removing net neutrality, that something like 99% of the unique human-authored comments on the system favored maintaining current net neutrality rules. So it's something that the public, even though this sometimes can be, you know, can seem like a wonkish technical idea, when explained to them, the public favors keeping the internet a neutral place.
Yeah, and I will add one thing that's been a unique distinction between the Trump administration and this agency. And it's that the recent decision by President Trump's Department of Justice to file an antitrust lawsuit against AT&T for their merger of Time Warner is entirely premised on the power of the ISP to discriminate and disfavor and harm competition online. So how is it that the Trump administration gets it, right? They get the fact that these are very, very powerful players who can do real harm to the competitive landscape. And then the regulator who's in charge of policing that activity is saying things are perfectly fine and we really should just step back and let it all work out on its own.
Right.
There's a massive contradiction that's happening within the executive branch that, you know, I think reveals exactly what you're saying. Public sentiment is very much against these large companies getting even more powerful. And even someone like President Trump understands that.
Right. And that's a really interesting point that I haven't heard mentioned before, that the antitrust laws might come down to bear on AT&T's merger. Now, what could happen? Let's start envisioning the nightmare scenario of if the FCC vote does go through December 14th, you get this vote 3-2, meaning by one vote, the future of our internet gets decided. Over time, what could we see happening to our internet? Some people in the last few days have been citing Portugal as an example of a nightmare scenario in doing away with net neutrality.
So the real danger is going to be in the markets where high-speed broadband is a monopoly. So about more than half of this country right now lives in a market where they only have one choice for their ISP when it comes to 100 megabits and up.
And then that would be me. I live in that space. So yes, go ahead.
Yeah. And the FCC ignores that reality in their order. They lower everyone's expectations about the competitive landscape and talk about, you know, 1 to 3 megabits and 25 is the high water mark, which is really kind of backwards. And so the reality is these monopoly markets are going to be where you get the worst excesses because there's just no way a consumer can switch. So you'll probably see higher prices. You'll see greater levels of discrimination, exclusivity favoring kind of the biggest brands on the internet to the detriment of any sort of new startup or disruptor. So if there was a startup that can really shake things up and really, you know, take down Google or take down Facebook or take down Netflix, they have no prayer under this new vision. And the idea that all those major internet companies would do is have to pay extra funds to the ISP to gain quality, high-speed access so that everyone else that competes with them is kind of relegated to the slow lane, to some sort of deteriorated infrastructure.
And actually, Ernesto, so does that mean that AT&T, if AT&T has a monopoly in a particular part of the country, that they could tell its consumers, who are essentially a captive audience, who the only choice they have is to have internet or not have internet, and if they have it, they have to have it through AT&T, and then AT&T might start offering them plans to say, well, if you want high speed for Netflix and Hulu and YouTube, it's going to cost you this much per month, but if you don't use those services, it'll cost you that much. And then you sort of pick between a plan, that means that a new alternative of, say, a video streaming service might not be accessible to you, or either might be completely inaccessible or greatly slowed down. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, you know, that's one scenario. Mm-hmm. I suspect it'll be even more behind the scenes than that. What they can do is they can raise the costs on Netflix, for example, and then Netflix subscriptions have to go up, which then allows them to ensure that their cable television package remains more competitive.
So that's why Netflix is against repealing net neutrality, because Netflix may be charged by AT&T. If you want your services to be accessible in high-speed internet, you have to pay us, huh?
So this is the crux of the Trump administration's Department of Justice assertion against AT&T, which is AT&T has the incentive to use HBO as an offensive weapon against other competitors. So they would make HBO more expensive for other companies. They would make it very cheap for AT&T customers, and as a result, everyone, you know, the prices for everyone goes up. Then that's kind of the core issue. And so it may not be as explicit as doing what Portugal does, which is like this tiering, this tier pricing, if it's in your face. They can do it behind the scenes and you may not really know. Like you may not understand why all your online video services suddenly are $5 more expensive. But the reality is it's because they're paying extra rents just to carry traffic over the internet as a result of you know, new powers given to the ISPs by the SEC.
And lest this end up sounding like a discussion about just getting high-speed TV shows and movies, what could the impact on undoing net neutrality have on community organizing, on independent news outlets, on all of those things that have made the internet a tool that can strengthen democracy?
Certainly. So if we ignore the economic aspects and we look at societal harms, right? We all rely on platforms like Twitter and Facebook and others because they work well and they allow us to reach a lot of people very quickly. There is always a potential that those platforms may change their practices that may not make it as easy for people to organize or organize in a way that they would prefer. So if you want an alternative option, then you're going to have to go to a new company which may try to target your preference of having a different means of communicating with people. However, that new company will not have the same world that Facebook and Twitter had to rise to the prominence they have. They will not have the funds to strike exclusive deals. They will not have the ability to say no to being discriminated against by the ISP, which may be favoring Facebook for a reason, right, from some sort of business arrangement reason. And the FCC's response to all of this is just watch and claim it's all innovation and claim it's all good for the market and it'll work out for people. It's really, you know, it's really tragic in a lot of ways.
So
now,
yeah,
I want to add actually one more point too, because this is a really important one. The FCC refers to antitrust law as the ultimate remedy that will solve all these issues. They talk about antitrust law more than 150 times in the order. But the reality is the Supreme Court years ago has told the expert agencies that they're actually the ones in charge of handling the regulated companies that they're tasked to oversee. So in this instance, the FCC's job is to handle ISPs, not antitrust law. So likely anyone who tries to use an antitrust claim against Comcast, they're going to lose in court under the Supreme Court doctrine of how antitrust law is supposed to be applied. They expect the FCC to be doing its job.
if the vote goes through, which it very likely will, it seems as though the public, the public's position does not matter to Ajit Pai and to the essentially him and the two other commissioners that are going to vote on this. Can Congress step in and take this issue up, which is what people have been wanting for a really long time, so that we don't have to keep fighting the same fight every time there's new leadership at the FCC?
So the reality is we will always be fighting this fight so long as the politics allow the, you know, the party, in this instance, the Republican Party, to take, you know, to take the side of the ISPs. It doesn't matter what changes in the law. And the fact is, the laws we have now are good. It's the enforcers and the people who are being put in charge that are bad. And I would suggest to everyone not to give up right now, because the reality is, whereas IG Pai may not be listening to the average American, may not listen to the average member of the public, he will listen to those Republican members of Congress who will be hearing from people, or are hearing from people right now, about how upset they are with the federal agency. And there's no reason any politician would want to walk the plank, you know, on behalf of a regulator that they owe nothing to. So there is still a short window, about 3 weeks from today, of people telling their members of Congress, particularly if you live in a state with a Republican senator, to go tell the FCC not to move forward. And the political gravity of what happens next is very much tied with, you know, the prospects of the Republican Party for 2018 and other electoral consequences. You know, Ajit Pai will listen to his own team at the end of the day. Hmm. So Congress has an extremely important role right now.
Right. Give out a website for the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yep, we're at EFF.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much, Ernesto, for joining us.
Thank you.
Ernesto Falcone is the Legislative Counsel with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. We've been discussing the FCC's planned vote to end net neutrality. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.